This episode of the podcast is brought to you by my friends at Zoandez, the world's leader in brine field services. Check them out at Zoandez.com. That's Zoandez.com. Hi, it's Joe Lowry. Welcome to another episode of the Global Lithium Podcast. Today is episode 182. My guest is John Evans, the CEO of Lithium Americas. John is one of the most experienced and forward-thinking leaders in the world of lithium. This is John's fourth appearance on the podcast. We have a wide-ranging discussion with a focus on what Lithium Americas is doing to put the United States back on the map as a significant producer of lithium chemicals. Without further ado, John Evans. John Evans, welcome back to the Global Lithium Podcast.
Thanks, Joe. Glad to be back with you. It's been a while, so glad to be back.
It's been 3 years. I just looked that up yesterday, and I could not believe that we haven't done a podcast episode in 3 years. I've done some with other LAC people, but it's good to have you back. LAC is on the cusp of bringing on the first U.S. resource that amounts to anything since the middle of the last century. You've overcome all sorts of challenges. So how does it feel?
Well, I mean, we're not done, but checked another thing off the to-do box. All the credit goes to the team. I'm not the smartest guy in the room. We have really good people. It's been a long journey. I mean, you've seen the roadmap. And look, the company was, we used to be old Lithium Americas. Now we're smaller Lithium Americas in North America, but you know, I combine all that workload in there to get both projects actually to where they are. And it's been, I feel good about it. And that I think hopefully we're a good example for other people. There needs to be more development in North America and other jurisdictions. And look, as you and I know, this is a hard business. It's a hard business. There's nothing easy here. The highs are really high and the lows are really low, and you really just got to keep it in the middle and just keep pushing forward. Because the sector is still has great fundamentals to it. I know that might not seem that way to folks uninformed, but you got to keep pushing forward.
Well, I will hearken back to a podcast we did in Jujuy in 2019. It wasn't your last appearance, but it was now almost 5 years ago. And you were saying at the time, you were actually talking about Cauchari in this respect, but you said, hey, I'm perfectly fine with $8,000 a ton lithium. And yeah, it's moved up a little, but the expectation that $80,000 a ton lithium was what lithium should be priced at was, it was a bubble. And I don't even view the price right now as particularly unattractive. It just depends on what your cost position is. So let's talk about the first sedimentary resource that will be in commercial production. You hear a lot of naysayers talk about, well, it's not hard rock, it's not brine, we don't understand it. Talk about why what you're doing really isn't anything new. It's just new to lithium.
Yeah, I mean, I compare us to, well, it might be in some circles, not a good comparison, oil and gas. The U.S. has become the largest exporter of crude oil and gas in the world now, with the application of horizontal drilling and all these other things that people used for conventional. We're creative, and when the need comes up, you tap resources that you always knew were there, but either the market wasn't big enough for them or you didn't have the right folks together to figure out how to unlock value. I mean, what we do is not complicated at all. You've been to our tech center. We've had analysts there, the government there. It's a pretty simple process that when you look at it, you're like, wow, this seems like it's a little too easy. And it's just because the geology is good. It's not any different than, in brine, where it doesn't work everywhere. It's not going to work on every clay deposit because we have a higher degree of illite in it, which I can go through what that means. But it's un not unlike brine, where what you do at a 200 part per million or 400 part per million is going to be different than what they do in Chile. So everything we do is off the shelf. It's simple equipment. I can point to the same size of that equipment around the world. We borrowed where it makes sense, like on the beneficiation part, which is the part that gets people confused. Like, how do I get lithium out of this silt or the clay? And it's just reversing what Mother Nature did. It put it back in water, and then it's not an ore. You just take the right cut of particle size. So anything below 75 microns is 90%+ of where the lithium is. And the efficiency of actually what you can separate, we got to like 93% lithium removed from the underlying gangue. And then from then on forward, it looks just like spodumene. Although I don't have to grind, crush, flotate, and I don't need to calcine. So you and I were talking before the show started, apples to apples, they're different. Spodumene is lithia. We measure ours in lithium contained. So the actual element lithium, we have an average of about 3,000 parts per million. Spodumene deposit's about a good one, 1.2, 1 to 1.2%. So that's what, 10,000 to 12,000 parts per million. However, I'm going to get it. I need Renee on this. I need to get into moles and chemistry and so forth. But I do need to handle more ore, twice as much ore. But the cost is lower than an integrated spodumene deposit, unless I've got something like, I'm about equal to the Greenbushes on a C1 basis, because I don't need to do all that other stuff. I'm just loading it in, mixing it in water, putting it through a hydrocyclone, and leaching it. And then from there forward, you make carbonate. So again, the geology is really, really good. I couldn't do this everywhere. And I start at surface. Our overburden ratio, I think, for the life of the project is one or less. The deepest part of the pit's like 350 feet. It's a big sand pit, is what it is. And it's only 1,000 acres for 40 years. Pretty small.
Yeah, and I think that's not well understood. And sometimes you can say it many, many times, and people just have kind of closed their ears. And until you're actually producing, I think there'll still be some sentiment issues to deal with about something new. Let's talk a little bit about every time we've had a discussion, whether it was Kachari or here or what we did together. FMC, it was about building a team and building alliances and building relationships. And just talk about, you have a massive capital project for lithium. Walk through what you had to go out and find that you didn't have team-wise, and then the people that are building the project, and then your relationship with the government, which have also been key to this.
Yeah, no, I think we have a really high performing team. That when the company was multiple assets, they were fit for purpose teams that were located, geographically right where the value needed to be added. Whether Argentina and you see the high quality team that they have there in place, and then the same thing was built out in Nevada, and it started around the right geologist and right engineering team. When we split the company up. Over that process as well, we had put the right corporate staff in. Now you've seen some new faces like Pablo. I needed an experienced CFO who's run public companies before. He's an ex-investment banker to get through the separation process to do all the right reporting. I mean, we're going to be a U.S. domestic issuer this year. We're not going to be a foreign domestic issuer. I mean, I'm essentially like an American company now because our assets are in the U.S. And guys like Richard. Who you've met as well. Richard, the best thing to do is to hire from the guy on the other side of the table. And I mean, he's a 25+ year veteran at Fluor. I pulled two other people from Fluor until their chairman called me and said enough. And he's built out, he knows who to look for. So, you and I were talking before that we started recording. You go out and you hire the smartest people out there that know, the hedgehogs that know their sector. And we have that now, whether it be on government relations, construction, Hugh Broadhurst and his team, Ryan Ravenel and all those guys, Renee, they're some of the best engineers out there. I'd put them up against everybody. And we have very deep in chemical engineers and metallurgists. And on the geology side, look, Tom was one of the founders of all this as well, and you know, guys like you know, that we have on our team as well in the geology department are great. Rachel and all those folks are great. Randall, good people. So you're right, and we're small. You know, there's not a lot of us, so not a lot of egos. You know, I came out of private equity after I left FMC. I went there, and you know, that's one of those places. You're the boss. Great. Do you know how to do a pitch? I hope so. You know, use Excel. Is we're not hiring an admin for you. You're going to do it yourself. And that's how we have always operated here. And that's the way we still are. But they're very, very good people. And that's the key ingredient to build off of. Plus, you need a good asset. You can't shine a turd in this business. And it all starts with geology. So you have a world-class asset that attracts really good, talented people, a good culture where it's open, a lot of respect, no egos, and it's just get the job done.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the actual resource and scalability. You've got a phase one and a phase two plan, but beyond that, how significant could this be in terms of U.S. production?
It's very big. So, you know, the difference here is that it's very uniform. So it looks like layers in a cake and it goes from rim to rim. We're on the southern end of the deposit on purpose. That's actually, again, geology. It was a volcano. It filled with water like Crater Lake. It uplifted in the middle, the Montana Mountains, and it emptied out to the south, right where we are. It's right at surface. But also where we were as well, you had this secondary eruption and hydrothermal treatment, which kind of did some of the beneficiation naturally. So you have these interdispersed with smectite, which is a lithium-containing ore. You have illite, and illite you can leach. Well, you could do 100, almost 100% of the lithium out of it. So the two of those intermingled allow for very good economics. And also really easy beneficiation versus if I was just a smectite deposit, and I'm not going to point out who those are around the US, but typically, I mean, Tom went around during COVID and I think we've been to every clay deposit. We could probably identify it by picture if you didn't give us a location, and we haven't found anything with illite in it. And we have it at surface. In terms of size, across the road from us, outside the pit shell, to the south of us, it all looks very, very similar. So we'll do a resource and reserve update this year. And the reserve's key now, given that we're going into production. Right now, we're at what, 16, 17 million tons? That number will go up tremendously. And the reserve will go up from that over 3 million tons to, I'm not going to give numbers, but it'll be significantly higher than that. And you start lining that up for spodumene or brine, you're top three in the world. We already are. But your real drilling data, I mean, at this point, we have over 1,000 drill holes. It'd be largest in the world. So you can do three phases, four phases. And I think the key with that too is location. You and I have both been to the middle of nowhere, and what that means, you can drive from Winnemucca, pick up some breakfast, go up on site. Your cell phone works. There's overhead power lines. We've got water, a paved road, fiber optic. I mean, you're at 5,000 feet. Yes, it's in the middle of nowhere, but that's relative. My closest neighbor is 8 miles away, but the main east-west rail line is 40 miles away in Winnemucca, and you know, you have civilization, you have Interstate 80. So that matters here as well. I'm not at 15,000 feet where if I get hurt, the nearest hospital is 2.5 hours away.
We've both been to Qinghai, and we know what the middle of nowhere is.
Yes. Yeah, and that matters here as well, in addition to the geology being really, really good. But yeah, you could do multiple phases here where, I mean, our footprint is a 1,000-acre pit for phase one. You know, the project area itself is around 10,000 acres. We have claims, all the claims that matter in Nevada we have, and we let go of the claims in Oregon for lots of different reasons, but wasn't of interest to us.
You made a quote on a prior episode that I liked. It wasn't that it was particularly original, but it was very meaningful. And you said that things are not going to go according to plan. They never do.
Nope.
And when we were talking about Cauchari a few years ago, and you had to wind up becoming the first importer of COVID vaccines and had to do a lot of things. There was a delay, world shut down, and you had to live through that. But I think that's important for people to understand that you lived through that project right up until recently. So
Yeah.
that's another experience you've had, and Kachari's done very well. The startup's gone very well. The quality's done very well. So that's something that people will say, well, yeah, it was late because, well, there was COVID. There were a lot of things that happened. When you look at your timeline for Thacker Pass, what concerns you about being on time?
It's the execution phase. So look, I got to close the loan, the DOE. If they tell you 60 days, it's more like 90 days or 120 days. We have the team mobilized, and then once you really go full notice to proceed, it's keeping to a timeline because I mean I'm drawing on the government. They floated us the interest, but it's just like how Kachari, you wanted to get into cash flow, and I've got a and this the other side, we've got a customer at the other end. Who we can talk about their strategy in a little bit. It's not the Brian Sullivan CNBC EVs are dead. Wait 3 years, see what happens then. And I'm glad to go on CNBC then when we talk about how many EVs are sold in the United States. We've got somebody who really wants this at the end of the day and has made an early investment because what else, if you're looking at geopolitics, if you're looking at OPEX, if you're looking at the IRA, there's not a whole lot choices, and they moved early, and because of that, I mean, they got a nice piece of their demand that's going to be tied up now with a resource and also an interest in the company at the table with a board member to help ensure that it's done right. But execution's key. I mean, look at Kachari, we learned a lot. It wasn't our first rodeo at FMC. We had a much smaller team there was great, but finding the right labor, hiring EPCM, it's a big lesson right there. I mean, oh, we can build it ourselves and cut back on the cost. Yeah. And you're going to save now and you're going to pay three times when you get down the road. I mean, if you're going to go get heart surgery, go to a cardiologist. Don't go to your general practitioner. I mean, this is the reason why. I mean, I was happy we came out with the DOE loan. We've been very open and honest about the CapEx and so forth. This is what stuff costs. Once you have someone like Bechtel come in and you cost all the equipment and you factor in having the right labor at the right cost. I had an analyst ask me, well, geez, your capital went up. I think people will be disappointed. I said, have you ever read a 43-101 DFS and then actually seen what the company actually spends? Typically, it's anywhere from at a low end of 25% to a high end. I've seen as high as 50 or more percent when you actually get to a class four estimate. Now, we came in at 30%, and it's a number that everyone signed off on, but again, best to be honest up front, do all the right work, and then lay all the pieces in and get the right people to help you. Which I learned that in Argentina. COVID was a interesting challenge I never want to go back to again. But the rest, I mean, I've got a lot more gray hair than when you and I were working together before. So.
Well, it was funny because I think it was yesterday I read this article that Rio bought Rincon for $825 million, and now they're going to put $350 million in a 3,000-ton carbonate plant. And nobody was screaming about that. I said, if you look at that capital intensity, and yeah, the Rincon asset will ultimately be bigger than that. But that's a significant capital outlay. But I guess
Yeah.
maybe because it's Rio, they just say, well, they can afford it.
Look at POSCO. POSCO was very honest and said, we're going to build 100,000 tons of capacity in Argentina. And we'll see what happens after the Catamarca. Very, very familiar with the Los Patos River, as we know. And they said it's going to cost $4 billion. And people are like, oh my God, that seems like so much money. The scale of these projects isn't the old days when I'm building a 10,000 ton or 5,000 ton expansion. I mean, these are greenfield 40,000 ton facilities. Look, if we built Cauchari all over again today, it would be in excess of $1.5 billion. I mean, at actual exchange rate basis, it was 1.1 billion. We took advantage of being near COVID supply chain. We owned it. There wasn't a lot of demand, but try doing that today with the flood of folks that are down there now. And even in the US and Canada, you've got, I don't know, 100 lithium companies. It's crazy. And
At
costs have gone up.
least.
Yeah, at least. Yeah. I like some of the names that they have out there too, some interesting ones. So the capital intensity for these things. And then, you'll turn around, and I know there's been a lot of, you've got a lot of fans in Australia here. So I always hear like, the IRA, this is ridiculous and so forth, with free markets and so forth. Well, the nickel industry doesn't really sound like that's the way it's going now. Now, is it? An industry that, let's do some math, a $5 billion industry in Australia, who is run by folks with big balance sheets, screamed to the government, and they gave them basically, we're not going to charge you any royalties. And it didn't sound like they're going to have to pay those back. $5 billion industry that employs maybe 10,000 people. The US, the economy of Texas is bigger than Australia. The automotive industry is a $1 trillion industry in the US that employs the supply chain, over 6 million people. It's not apples and oranges. So, and that's where it gets back to, it's not about climate change here. This is about economic and national security. So I'm going back to your question about the government and so forth. You know, there's sort of three pillars to this: national and economic security, and then climate security. All three of those you have to consider. That's why governments now are acting much different. It's not, it's where the puck is going. There was a quote someone said today, when somebody in the Biden administration, that the critical minerals industry risks turning into an OPEC. They're right. They're right.
Well, if you looked at it right now,
It already is.
it's more OPEC
Yeah, I mean, you and I can go to one of the OPEC meetings for in Las Vegas with Shanghai Metal Markets. So,
OPEC right now. Yeah, well, we'll get into geopolitics in a minute. We haven't had an episode since GM became your partner, and let's talk about how significant that is. I know you are very much a fan of that relationship, and obviously, there's a lot of criticism out there because they're not Tesla. Well, I think you alluded to it earlier that it's taking some time, but things are really going to change ultimately. So
yeah,
let's
I
talk a
mean,
little bit about GM.
I wouldn't. That's the what you see on the surface for the OEMs in the U.S. I mean, GM in particular doesn't reflect what's going on underneath. And I mean, I think you've seen some of the hires that GM has made. I mean, Zach Kirk
Yep.
on the board. He came from Tesla, and prior to that, Apple. Kirk Kelty, Renee's old boss, is there with batteries, and then they have a whole group of folks to support that. You know, they're no one gives guidance anymore, but I mean, they're building somewhere like 200,000 or 300,000 vehicles this year, including Blue Drop, which are like the Rivian vans that Amazon's taking. And they're still committed to an all-electric light vehicle fleet by 2035. But to get there for these large OEMs during the run-up to this $80,000 a ton, you've got to realign your entire supply chain. That takes time. Now, what they have going for them versus some of the pure EV players is that you got plenty of cash flow. You're selling Suburbans, you're selling Blazers, you're selling all kinds of other great cars. Ford's in the same situation. So they've gone back, resharpened their pencils. You're still seeing deals. You see the graphite deal, there was the nickel deals. There's even semiconductor deals like GM did with GlobalFoundries. So they're putting all the pieces in place, whereas they see the second half of the decade where things really start to take off, which has always been the case. 2027, 2026, 2030, those are areas where, you know, the US, I think, has the second largest number of pure EVs on the road, 2 million cars. Not a lot compared to China, but still a lot. And it's growing every single year. And yes, you will see hybrids, more of those, as charging infrastructure goes in place, as range anxiety, and as actually, I think the other important thing is as battery chemistry changes. You and I are carbonate guys, we are in a hydroxide world. And it's amazing you see that carbonate is more stable than hydroxide. And I think it's important for folks to know too that look to Tesla. Tesla, what are they building now? 10 gigawatt hour LFP factory in Sparks, Nevada. They're using it in their Powerwall. Yeah, you're going to see much more LFP or LFMP in the U.S. And I think you're going to see a mix of mid to low nickel. Because what I've heard from our partners, and we talk to GM every week, is that, you know, one of the areas that all the OEMs have a concern over as you switch to the Detroit Automotive Car Show vehicles that not everyone's going to buy, to the everyday cars, the entry level, mid ranges, what really causes people anxious, battery fires. You hear them out of every day. High nickel chemistry is inherently unstable and subject to thermal runaway. So moving to a mid nickel where you can actually mix in LFP. You'll talk about the Ultium platform itself, where you can mix and match chemistries that reduces that thermal runaway risk. Whereas that's one less problem you have, where getting people to buy an EV is one thing, you know, the charging piece, but cars exploding into flames on the side of the road, it happens a lot more in China than I think people realize in the US. We can't have that here. And that's something that they're trying to manage too. So all that stuff's going on inside. Look, Ford's been more open about it, but GM is doing all the same things. And you can see the hires, the investments, just give them time. And I think they have a huge edge over pure EV companies because they don't have to keep dropping price to try to keep share. They're going to lose share. And these guys could take time and actually they sell more vehicles than anybody else now, ICEs at least, because they know what people like. So I think the product at the end of the day is going to be better. It's go back and sharpen your pencil.
Well, if we go back to just a US story and you look at the map of planned gigafactories, there's I think 25 of them out there. And let's just assume maybe only 10 get built in the time frame people are talking about, but one large gigafactory wipes out phase one of Thacker Pass. Admittedly, GM will have multiple plants they're running it through, but if you just look at a gigafactory map and say it's a Panasonic 47 gigawatt hour plant in Kansas, that would take everything you're making in phase one. And
Yeah.
that's how big the opportunity is here. And I think that even if the EV story is not going to play out the way the Biden administration announced when they were going up through the IRA and it's delayed, just like CAFE standards were delayed, this is a huge opportunity.
Yeah,
And
you're right. And you look at, so GM is contractually obligated to build, they have four gigafactories, right? Three with LG and one with Samsung. Again, that and I'll let them talk about chemistries, but you're going to see some diversity. That's a lot of material. I use 0.8 as a conversion. I mean, yeah, you need 2.5 of me. You have BlueOval. You've got not talked about stuff like IFL and others. MyNextEnergy. I mean, there's all these companies. Panasonic. Everybody's building. I think the last number I saw was like 700 gigawatt hours of capacity or something going into the North American market. You're going to have a whole market here. Forget like North Asia pricing. You're going to have North America pricing. And I think what's happening to the OEMs too is that GM has past relationships and deal with Honda. Honda has a deal now with Nissan. So you're going to see, I think, levering and sharing between these folks too. And that, look, I've got capacity at my facility. It depends what people use. You're going to use prismatic, we're going to use cylinder, whatever. But even the gigafactories being built, you're seeing variety. And GM's, I think, they're doing cylindrical at one. There's prismatic and pouch at another. So I think this capacity, it's going to allow other OEMs who are maybe slower or don't have the balance sheets, to draw off of some of these other facilities and some of the bigger OEMs, and like GM's tapping DOE money as well. Once the infrastructure gets in place here, it's going to help support, to your point, it's slower than we thought, but it's coming.
it's slower than we thought, but it's fast enough for what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because look at your timeline. It takes 2 years to build a gigafactory. It takes a lot longer than that to put a lithium project online. And I think that you really have first mover advantage. I don't want to disrespect Albemarle. Yes, they have Silver Peak, but that's a tiny asset. And
Well, and kudos to Albemarle for, I know it was they were off malign, they did this. They did a convertible debenture. It was like people are like, oh, this is terrible. No, Albemarle wants to build through the cycle. I mean, it's smart. I mean, they bet that their stock price is going to go up, and it will. It already is back above where it was when they announced that deal. And they need to restructure their debt, but they wanted to not drop everything. They were forced to drop everything a couple of years ago, and they missed that window. And they're not going to do that again. So, and it's hard for companies to do that like theirs because, again, you have the lesson community. Oh, everyone should be shutting down right now. Then everyone turns around and says, why aren't you guys ready? Because the companies in this space are tiny. I mean, nothing against Albemarle, but they're $14 billion market cap today or 15. You can't build more than one, maybe one and a half of these things at any one particular time. There's no Dow Chemicals or anybody else that's doing this stuff.
Zalandez offers technology and services that support both direct lithium extraction and conventional evaporation ponds. Minimize the environmental impact of your lithium site through Zalandez data-driven insights and tailored solutions for each extraction method. Go to zalandez.com for more information. That's Zalandez.com. Mentioned the DOE a couple of times. What were the lessons that you learned in the admittedly rigorous process it takes to secure funding from the DOE?
You need to be well prepared. So, the DOE is sort of split it in half. I view it like banks are. They have the capital market side, and then there's a wall between them and the investment banking side. And it's very much that way in the Department of Energy. So you've got the front end with the secretary and her staff going out and cutting ribbons. And then you got the bureaucrats and the contractors and professionals in the back end at LPO. It's like dealing with a bank, with high-priced law firms. They hire outside expert resources and so forth. And I think you've heard that from Jigar. They were flooded with applications, but separating the wheat from the chaff is hard. And then when you do get in the process, you're reviewed. Once they accept you, they invite you. Once they invite you, once you pass certain wickets, you get a letter of substantial completion. And then you go into real due diligence, which takes a year. You pay for the law firms, you pay for their folks that to bring in, and it's like getting a Mayo Clinic physical, which I think the taxpayers should be happy in that the government takes a very conservative view on your OPEX, on lithium pricing. They do a review of the North American market, your partner, in our case, GM, because look, they want to get paid back. So, if I come in and say, long-term view of pricing is $20,000 to $30,000 a ton, they're going to say, no, we got this other study that says the long-term pricing for lithium is going to be $14,000 a ton. Well, that doesn't make sense. Well, that's what we're going to use. You've got to pass quite a test, to get to where you are, but you have to be super well prepared as well. Data rooms, team has done all the work. There's no permit issues. There's no legal overhang. It's a very thorough process, much more so than if you were to borrow money from private equity or something like that. So I think the government has a good process that they've honed, and they have very good people that came from Wall Street, came from engineering companies. So, kudos to them. And it's needed, just like the CHIPS Act and everything else, to get these things going and to start the momentum.
You were, in my mind, ahead of the curve with the technical center you built in Reno. How helpful was that in the whole process of convincing both the government and other interested parties that what you're doing at Thacker Pass can really happen?
Yeah, super helpful. I mean, you've been there, and it's on a scale that you would find at like a federal laboratory. I think some folks came in and said, well, I mean, can you make like 10 tons a day? No, it's not a plant, but it's much bigger than what a company would use to size equipment or to do chemical analysis. And it really came out of hiring SGS a couple of years ago, saying, look, we're going to go through a financing process. We're going to go through the loan process. Let's pretend you were hired by somebody else to do a complete due diligence and, give me a report card on where we need to do more work. Interestingly enough, their focus really was just on beneficiation. The question is always says, well, how do you get lithium from this underlying ore? Once we went through beneficiation and actually thickened it and leached it, they're like, you don't need to demonstrate that. That's done every single day, very similar to spodumene. And in the back end, it looks just like any other carbon. So we focused on doing beneficiation at scale, and you've been there. So we have a production scale hydrocyclone that we used for 6 months, and now it's all under one roof, all integrated. So you're not scaling up, you're just adding more. And then the back end, all the recycles have to be accounted for and put back in the process, all connected together. Can you run continuous? I mean, it's a kilo lab plant, like you would do if you were scaling up drug production, all supported by an ISO 9001 certified analytical and wet chemical laboratory. It was hugely helpful. Not only for us, but then of course the financing process the first time, which yielded GM, although there were a few people that just missed the dance floor and were a day late. They weren't the only ones interested, GM. And then going through the DOE, I mean, look, they hired folks that were from the outside. They walked through and like, this is great. You guys have everything here. Not a lot of questions. This is a pretty easy due diligence because we had reams and reams of data that we had generated over the course of, 2 or 3 years, and now could demonstrate it operating. That thing runs continuous every day. It was really helpful. And at a scale that, look, you and I have been in this industry, I don't know anybody who has that size. And even when projects are built today, you never see it. It's a great resource. It's spodumene or brine. Everybody does this. Well, go run it through something like that and see if it really works. Because I mean, the one story I told folks, when SQM owned, they were the operator at Cauchari prior to Ganfeng coming in. What they did is they came in and they said, here's the flow sheet. And it looked just like Atacama, to the point where they sent, and I hate to say if anyone in SQM is listening to this, It was ridiculous. They sent samples of brine from the Atacama to Swenson to size the evaporator crystallizer set. Well, that's ridiculous. 1,700 parts per million lithium, different impurity profile. That's when Ganfeng came in, we stopped for 6 months, actually almost 7 months, and had to reduce stuff because it wouldn't have worked. So even what you do next door in Chile isn't completely applicable to Argentina, and it's still the same basic process. The only thing we really got out of that with them was the pond design was great, but the rest we had to redo it. That's why folks are like, well, it's done everywhere around the world. Every single one of these things is bespoke.
On one of my visits to the tech center, I think the governor was there, and there were some visitors from the tribe that is around your asset. It all seemed pretty friendly to me, yet you continue to get pilloried about the indigenous people and all of that sort of thing. Can you tell me what LAC is doing and has done, throughout this whole process to have amicable relations or very friendly relationships with the stakeholders in Humboldt County and where that stands now?
Yeah, things are great now. I mean, the closest tribe's about 40 to 50 miles away, and the approach, and I give a lot of credit to Alexi sort of taking a Canadian view on this, where it's a little different how you approach in Canada, but very open and candid. We hired a third party to come in around for the community to be a facilitator, so it didn't look like us driving the bus, to get all the concerns on the table and all the issues. And it's turned into a dialogue that is daily in some cases, where if people have questions, if we had to hire or bring in experts to explain permit terminology or other issues. And this has happened over more than 5 years now. I mean, we've been in doing this engagement. So, what's come out of that are some community benefits as well. And that, look, to be honest, Humboldt County, the north part of the county, is very rural and there's not a lot of job opportunities. And it's allowed people to come back to work. Businesses are excited. New folks are coming in. I mean, Humboldt County doesn't have a lot of large industries in it. If you go to Winnemucca, you'll see parking lots of people getting on buses going to Gold Strike at Barrick or up to other mining projects towards Lovelock. Now those folks can stay home. And tribal members, we've had them come back from as far away as North Carolina to work for Sawtooth Mining. So it's taken a lot of effort. The resistance that you get started with two guys that weren't even from there, that sort of came from the Keystone Pipeline. And what they do is they look for things that are a political third rail. First, it was permanent too fast. Then it was environmental degradation. Then it was green colonialism. And whatever resonates with the press, and the press loves to talk about this stuff. If I see one more book about critical minerals, I'm going to write a book. It's going to say, get stuff done. Because we just go over and over and over stuff that, if you really dig in, I mean, like the two guys that were out there were part of that DeGreen resistance group. I couldn't even get the newspapers to dig into that until JL came from EE News and said, oh, these are the guys that are anti-transgender. And they admitted it. And still, the guys were like, that whole group that there was like, my enemy's enemy is my friend. Now I don't hear from any of these folks anymore because all the court cases. But think about it. This took 2 years of permitting, 2.5 years of appeals, 4.5 years of wasted time, and we got to the same point. There wasn't any issue here in the first place. And every project, look, you've got. I called Keith. I said they're coming your way. They did. And now you see, and even in the Salton Sea, a lawsuit filed, along with earthworks. So it's almost as if some of these groups, you can't have any constructive dialogue. Folks will say, well, there's a place for these, but as long as it's not anywhere around me. And you've got folks that are commenting that are biologists or environmentalists that have no experience in anything. And that's the whole problem with anything we want to do in this country, whether it be transmission lines, solar panels, whatever else. We're thrown into that permitting thing, but it's not really just us, it's everything. One person's allowed to hold up the process for everybody and for the common good. And we've got to get a way to get through that in this country. Canada has the same problems to some degree. Australia, not so much, which I'm not quite sure how, because they have a very big Aboriginal community, but I'm not going to get into that subject.
That's all a prelude to the next question, and that is this whole initiative to build a robust battery supply chain, but when every step along the way allows for all these obstacles, do you see any movement to changing that in federal or state governments?
Well, state of Nevada is been very good, and Nevada has a very modern mining code that's oft used as an example that the federal government should follow. One of the big debates is over royalties on federal land, where oil and gas, coal have to pay, and minerals do not. Now, there's ways to do that in Nevada. For instance, we have to pay a tax based on our net proceeds, if you will. So it's not a dirt tax, but it's off your profits, which makes sense because, as you and I both know, I can dig as much ore as I want up, but our capital and most of our costs are tied up in making it into a pharmaceutical grade product and go into a cathode. That's where you spend the money. It's not the ore. And I do think there's a lot of, in fact, I know on both sides of the aisle, there's a want for permit reform. But unfortunately, what happens is you have the fringes from each side of the party. It's the problem that we have in politics in the US now, that a few voices will poison the pond for everybody else. But if you look at, I would say moderate. I hate to use terms moderate or whatever, extreme, but the folks that are legislator-wise in the Senate and the House that are, I would say, more moderate or center right, center left, they're all in because it impacts everything. Divert to AI for a minute. I mean, the power load for artificial intelligence, I was reading the other day that the amount of power required for people to do chat GPT searches every day is equivalent to 1 gigawatt hour of power. That's like 30,000 homes just to do a search, like, rewrite my resume for me. And you got AI chips like NVIDIA came out. The current chip uses up to 700 watts. It's like running your microwave oven for one chip. How many do you need to serve in a server area? Like 100? Thousands? It's a real issue. And it's all wrapped up together. So I think both parties want to do it. But I don't think if they listen to the extremes on either side, they get into trouble and nothing gets done in the interim. So, there was a good chance for it last year, and they missed the window. They're going to have to do something, though, because it's beyond us. It's everything in this country. Can you imagine building the interstate highway system today? Oh my God. And that already took 40 years to do.
Well, that was the discussion I always had when I was living in Shanghai with my team there. And they would talk about building 17,000 kilometers of high speed rail and ask me how that LA to San Francisco bullet train was going. And it was obvious that I would prefer to continue to live in the United States rather than in the Middle Kingdom. But, it is certainly easier to get things done over there than it is here.
Yeah, I think that's a huge challenge that we're going to have to get through in this country. And Europe has, I would say, even worse issues than we do. I give the government tons of credit for putting these programs in place around critical minerals, batteries, semiconductors, and so forth. But we've got to get that fixed as well so the capital can get deployed. Because, as you know, I mean, folks, we're fully permitted and don't have any legal issues. Everything's been dismissed or thrown out. But that's a huge challenge. And there are other projects we can point to that are like in Minnesota and so forth that have been in litigation for a decade or more. And no one's going to finance it because you don't know when you're going to get a payback on your money invested. It's just really tough. If they fixed that, you would have a lot more private capital coming off the sidelines as opposed to the government having to set up an environment where it's very, very attractive. I think that would actually help the government meet its aims at the end of the day, which I don't know if they fully kind of get that. Gotion's coming here. CATL's here. BYD. I mean, this is the second largest automotive market in the world. BESS here is probably growing, I saw a data point, faster than China. Everybody wants to be here. Set up an environment where all that private capital is going to create great jobs, lots of tax revenue, but they got to deal with allowing people to actually build stuff.
Yeah, well, energy storage, Rho Motion's number for 2024 is just about 200 gigawatt hours, and
Huge.
that's basically five Kacharis. I mean, or five Thacker Passes. Either take your pick. This episode is also brought to you by Mississippi Lime. Are you looking for the highest purity calcium products to produce battery quality chemicals? Look no further than my friends at Mississippi Lime. That's limeforlithium.com. LIME, the number 4,
LITHIUM.com.
Well, let's talk about the market for a second. What are your views on the abject levels of negativity towards lithium equities?
Yeah, I mean, look, you and I both know the economics and we can do the math and so forth. So, Africa and lepidolite now are going to fill the vacuum up. Well, where were they when pricing was 80,000? Where was it when it was 25,000 back in 2015? I don't think you, that material's all going one place. I don't think you can use, I know China's the largest market, but China's dealing with its own issues in terms of typical overcapacity and trying to export your way out. And I think we have to live through that, where there's going to be failures. There's going to be a lot of EV companies that were zombies and so forth. And at the same time, you and I were talking before, we had this market developing. This will be its own market. I know there's already a look, it's a small volumes right now, but I forgot how much was imported in the US last year, 50,000 tons. That number is going to grow to a couple hundred thousand tons and be a market all by itself. And I think people miss that because they're looking at the 2,000 tons that was traded on the Guangzhou exchange last week or whatever else. And those aren't even companies typically, right? We all know it's traders and it's people speculating. In Korea, a lot of things are still done under contract. If you look into import and export data, as you and I both have done in the past, or look at public filings of companies that are a little bit more open, like an Albemarle or SQM, that's not the pricing, but that's what everybody uses. And then on top of that, analysts just pile on saying, well, it's going to go down even further. I don't get how that even, and they've been wrong before, and I think they're willing to be wrong, and for the market then turns around and then everyone's going to, they're going to say, well, something happened or whatever else. But there's very little work that's done. And I think the people that provide all the data, I hate to go out on a limb here, but there are some analysts that have teams that are located in certain places that's as gospel. And I don't think it's actually right at the end of the day when you start putting together numbers and the stoichiometry around these projects. It couldn't be right, but people blindly follow it because equities are down right now, and the industry is just in a bad place. It'll come back, just like crypto's back now, and I guess AI is the bubble of the day.
The interesting thing to me is that if you go back to Q4 of 2020, and I always like to use SQM because they're very transparent about what their price is, and it was $5.30 a kilo. That was their LCE yield in Q4 of 2020. And it went up to 59 at the peak in 2022. And in Q4, which it may not be the low point, maybe Q1 of this year is the low point as things shuffle out, but it was still $16 in
It's
Q4
higher
of
than
2023. Yeah. And so the low this time is going to be 2.5 to 3 times what the low was
exactly.
in the last cycle. This is the most negative I've ever seen, just the random guy who will call me to talk about it. It just everybody's just like, the sky's falling. And I said, $80,000 lithium
Ridiculous.
was never a real thing.
No. Never was. And to your point's perfect in as well. I think our viewpoint, you and I have enough experience to remember when it was $5,000 a ton. And each time this resets, the floor is higher. Five became 10, 10 became 12. Now we're at whatever I want to call it. I think Fast Markets or S&P this week was like 15 is kind of what they're saying, North Asia pricing, which if that's the bottom, yeah, great. I'm happy at Thacker Pass at $6,000 a ton. Kalchari is in good shape. And yet you look around and you can't get financing for anything. Everyone has stopped everything. And it's just going to create the same problem. What's the next floor going to be? 20? Which is probably where it needs to be to stay if people are going to continue to invest through the cycle. Because right now, only a couple of companies have the guts to do it.
Well, the interesting thing was last year, the average price for lithium carbonate, average for the year in Japan was mid 50s. It closed the year at 40 a kilo after having hit 35 in November. So that whole line that it just tracks the spot down until there's convergence. And Korea was very similar, a little different between hydroxide was higher in Korea. Albemarle's price, average price in 2023 was higher than 2022.
Yeah.
So, that's what I always like to talk about is there is not one lithium price, but almost every analyst is just fixated on one number and that's the China spot price.
Yep.
So
And
I
it's such a small portion, and again, it suits the needs of some parties, yeah, because those folks aren't stopping, and it's an opportunity, actually. So.
Yeah. Well, I think we just lived through it, but I think you're well positioned. You're in the process of building, and by the time you're producing, I think we will be back in the reality of lepidolite is not going to be able to be the swing production
No, I mean, look,
at the kind of price we're at today.
you and I have been to China many times. I don't remember anyone trying to sell me their lepidolite mine and us having a lot of interest in it. We know it all too well, and I think, yeah, you've got to, things are going to get better, and I think we already know where they need to be. And this industry is, look, we predicted this 2015, not the numbers we're at now. We're actually higher. I didn't expect EVs to snap on. It was just Tesla was an idea and it was kind of cool. It was all portable electronics at that point. I mean, the world's changing right in front of us over the next 10 years. And that's the kind of, as we both know, it takes so long to build these things. This part of the supply chain is the most complicated. If you're not doing something now, you're going to miss the next cycle too.
Well, you've had a challenging run, both with Caucharí before the split, now with Thacker Pass. You've got a lot of work ahead of you. You probably could have made a lot more money in private equity or doing something else.
I could have, yes. I left a lot of money on the table when I left my last gig, so.
So from a personal perspective, why are you putting yourself through this ongoing series of challenges
Self-flagellation. Yeah, it's a,
that
well, it's personal now. I mean, look, I believe in the asset. I believe in the team. I believe in the process, and I actually really believe we kind of have to do this. I mean, I beat the same drum you do, where there's no reason why you can't do this here. We did it here first,
Yeah,
and then it went someplace
it
else,
started here.
right? And that includes batteries, everything. So, I met with pretty well-known U.S. senator, and he was very ticked off when Ford made their CATL announcement. He says, "Why is this so hard? I was told it would be 3 years for a COVID vaccine. We had it in 9 months. What's wrong with this?" He's right. I've never seen such negativity, or just it's un-American. And I mean, we can do anything we want to here. We have resources. We have smart people. We don't have a shortage of labor. Most of the people that work for us are chemical engineers. You don't need to be a, oh, we're running out of mining engineers. We don't have any battery engineers. We have tons of smart people here. And young folks want to work in this sector as well. And it's not rocket science. It was done here when we didn't have computers, for Pete's sake. And they did it really well. So to me, it comes down to at this point, I really want to see this off and going, and hopefully it's an example for other people to follow. It actually helped acts as a catalyst for us to have some success in North America here amongst the NAFTA group, because we're going to have a sizable industry here, and it can't all come from one or two places. It has to be distributed. We live in a complicated world now. Cold War's back, and there's no reason why we can do it economically here too. There are other projects out there that you're going to be able to make steady free cash flow on this. It's not like we don't have any decent resources. You're just going to be creative.
All right, my last question for you is, your internal drive has kept you in this game, but how have you kept your team motivated through all the negativity?
Yeah, I give them a lot of credit. I think the folks that we have all believe in that same vision. Like, this is a kind of a personal mission right now. There's too much invested. Like, Hugh Broadhurst, God bless him. He moved to Reno, Nevada, bought a house off the internet during COVID and moved out there. And his view is like, I put a lot of sweat equity in this thing. I'm not giving up. This thing is going to get built. So, and that's kind of the attitude of folks we have. They're very gritty folks. They've all come from large companies, some come from private equity. So there's no one here is faint of heart, that's for sure. And we, again, low ego. We're too small to have politics here, and the right people in the right jobs. So everybody has stayed very focused. And I think too, they're really proud of what they're doing. I mean, the work with the government took a long time. We have very good relationships with the federal government and the state government. And look, for as weird as stuff seems on TV, there's a lot of really smart and good people that work in Washington that are doing good things for this country. And look, I feel at this point between GM, the federal government, the state government, the county, I want to deliver. I don't want to let them down. And I think that's the attitude of our team too. They really feel proud, but they also feel an obligation to do it right and then not let these parties down. Because a lot of folks, for as tough as it might have seemed in the press sometimes, we had a lot of supporters. And I've had a lot of notes like, we're rooting for you and so forth. Yeah, you want to win one here, and hopefully it inspires other people to do the same thing.
What did I miss? Anything that we should talk about before rapid fire?
No, I mean, look, the one thing I harp on again, everyone's like, well, this has never been done before. I've been in and out of this industry. You've been in it the whole time. That means nothing. In the tech center, I'll go back to, one test is worth more than 1,000 expert opinions. And there's a lot of experts outside of, we know a lot of them that just popped up and started a shop. They're all critical minerals experts. You got to put it to actually build. And in our case, I mean, the tech center proves that out and all the work we've done. But I hear a lot of opinions without a lot of data behind them. So I'll just leave that with folks.
All right. You've always been one of the leaders in rapid fire with the lights on the plane and some of the other. How do you tell where what side your gas cap is on in your car? So these are easy. This one is just like, and I've asked you the book question before, but I may ask you, what's the last book that you read?
I just finished Chip Wars.
Okay. Movie or streaming? Your favorite movie or favorite show you've streamed in the last couple of years?
I was really bummed that Billions was finally done after 7 seasons. I love that show. Great acting, but it's a great story.
So did I. And my final question comes from one Rene LeBlanc. I asked him, what should I ask? And he said, since you are a staunch Ohio State fan,
Oh.
if you could watch any Ohio State athletic event ever, we bring it back for you. What game or match or whatever would you go to?
Well, unfortunately, I've been to some losing games, which broke my heart. So, I wish I could change the outcome of the Georgia Ohio State Peach Bowl, which I was at, where we lost the game in the last 7 seconds, but it was a thrilling game to watch them silence a crowd in Atlanta, Georgia. I was sitting in the Ohio State section. It was silence for the first 3 quarters of the game. Like, wow, these guys are really good. So, and I will be going to the game next year. So any of the Michigan folks out there, good luck this coming season. So I think we're very stocked this year.
All right, John Evans, thank you very much. It's been too long.
Yeah, thanks, Joe.
Appreciate it. John is always practical and articulate. I've said it before, I'll say it again here. He was the best boss I ever had, and he continues to be a great mentor despite being a zodiac younger than I am. I don't give investing advice on this podcast, but I will give you this piece of life advice. Mentors matter in your life. They don't necessarily have to be older than you are, but when you find one, cultivate the relationship. I will be speaking in Singapore next week at Tribeca's Future Facing Commodities event. You can live stream that. You can find the details online. I will also be seeing cherry blossoms in Tokyo. I'm supposed to hit the city when they are at their peak, and that's always a favorite of mine. So rather than flying directly home from Singapore, I'm going to go through Tokyo. And I'm going to close today with a Japanese saying, Hana Yori Dango, which literally means dumplings rather than flowers. I know this sounds a little bit odd. The practical meaning in Japanese is that you should value your needs over your wants. And sorry, one final thought. I want to congratulate Sam Piggott, the new CEO of Lithium Argentina. I listened to the earnings call today. I thought he did a wonderful job, and I wish him all the best in his new role. Thanks again for listening.